things get a little bit grim. But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah! That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
He's a little older.
Oh.
So it's a little more like factual based.
Oh, okay. I mean, you know, I love a fact.
You do. You will truly enjoy this.
Yay. All right.
Hi.
Why is this such a struggle? I like tried to start the episode over again. Hi.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's going good, Taylor. How's it going for you?
It's good. It is Sunday afternoon.
Again. It is, as always.
We love a Sunday afternoon.
Happy to be here on a Sunday morning.
I don't have to travel this week for work, so I'm excited about being home.
We should movie night.
Yeah. That sounds fun.
I love that.
Yeah, we need to get in a couple horror movies.
Yes, we do.
Because it is.
The Crow is one that I have on my list.
Yes,
very highly.
Absolutely. Anything new going on with you right now?
You know what? Same old, school's back in session. I'm cooking up something like in my personal life. I'm like branching out on a new thing right now that I'm just not ready to like announce to the pod world.
Sure.
But you know, things are like moving and
maybe you'll have done it by the time this episode comes out, because this is pocket.
Oh, you think? Oh, who knows? Maybe you already know what I'm cooking up.
Maybe.
Ooh, time warp.
Let's do the time warp. I wonder how much it would be for me to pay for that, like clip it.
I can't imagine that the copyright for Rocky Horror Picture is too high.
I would hope not, but it could be.
I want to go. One of my biggest life dreams is to go to like a live Rocky Horror. I have the script. I do all the shit at my house, throw toast at my TV and holler at it when I watch it.
But I'd love to go see it.
Dress up as fun. Magenta.
Yeah. I like that.
I like
that one plays kind of often. That's not too hard to catch, I don't think.
No, it's not. I just haven't ever. It's never been invited. I've never taken it upon myself to seek one out.
I see.
But one day it will.
Yeah, one day it'll happen.
Halloween's just around the corner. Who knows? Maybe this is my
Halloween's
year.
Already passed.
Oh, well, it depends when this episode comes out.
Yeah.
We don't know. Sorry. Let's stay within the...
Time doesn't exist in this
ambiguous timeline here. Well, you know what isn't disambiguous?
What's that?
Murder.
Disembodied?
Disambiguous?
Disambiguous murder. All right.
Disembodied murder. If there is no body, there is no crime.
Oh, girl, well, I'm about to tell you.
Oh, you are?
About a body.
And a crime. Oh, girl, okay.
Wouldn't you know?
Listen, get me right on into it.
All right, here we go. Before we get started, my sources were an episode of Forensic Files, a Crime Junkie episode, and Wikipedia.
I love that.
Thanks.
We love a girl who quotes her sources.
And we do. Super appreciate it. All right, Ronald Cohen lived in Jericho, New York for 9 years, and he decided to sell his home, and the new buyer wanted a large industrial drum to be moved from the crawl space before they took possession. Ronald didn't know what was in the drum, nor how long it had been there. It was there when he moved in, and he tried to move it once, but it was too heavy, so he left it.
I'm stupid. What do you mean a drum?
Like a big, metal.
Like a bass drum?
No,
like an oil drum.
An oil drum, yes.
A barrel. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm thinking he's got a drum kit.
Nope.
Okay.
Not quite.
Sorry.
All good. I can see where you would have thought that. Okay. So it was too heavy, and he left it. As time passed, and eventually he just forgot about it. But since the buyers insisted upon it being removed, Ron had to call his realtor and some movers in order to get it moved.
Okay.
The barrel was about 300 pounds, and it was a huge pain to get out of there. But they were able to get it down to the street, and they hoped that it would be picked up with trash. However, the trash day came and went, and they did not pick up the barrel, and there was a note left on it saying they couldn't take it because there were potentially hazardous material inside.
Oh my gosh.
And besides that, it was too heavy.
Okay.
Ron and his realtor went to get screwdrivers to open the lid. They were like, hazardous material? We don't care about it. Nah, we're just going to open it and see what's inside.
No, it can't be that hazardous.
Right, like, we're just going to dump it out ourselves.
It's not uranium. Hope probably.
They opened the rusty lid to see another barrel inside of this barrel.
Oh, for it's the Russian nesting dolls.
Yes. And there was an odor.
Oh, no.
Curiosity went out at this point, so they opened the second barrel lid, and they were accosted by a wretched smell. As they peered into the barrel, they saw a withered hand and a shoe.
No. No.
Yep. Immediately, they called the police. All right. Now we're doing a flashback.
Ooh. I feel like we need a sound effect.
I'll figure one out.
Okay.
Rena Mariquin was 27 years old when she moved to New York from El Salvador. She had been married and found out that her husband was cheating on her, so she decided she would make a new life for herself in the States. It was 1968, and Rena had big dreams about breaking into the fashion industry. She had a passion for it and wanted to study fashion.
Yeah.
She was going to school to improve her English, and her teacher was a woman named Kathy. They were both from El Salvador and became close friends. Rena had also gotten a job, and she worked at a factory where she painted plastic flowers and leaves.
Cute.
Rena told Kathy everything. Well, nearly everything.
Okay.
She told her that she had gotten herself a boyfriend, and that he was older.
Ooh.
She wouldn't tell Kathy much about him, but Kathy did find out that he was married.
Uh-oh.
Rena. Yeah. Rena was convinced that he was going to leave his wife any day and be with her.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry, sweet pea. She wanted nothing more than to have a life with him once he was divorced. Unfortunately, her lover did not have any intention of divorcing his wife.
Hmm.
But still, they saw each other regularly, and eventually Rena became pregnant. She thought, this is it. Now he's going to leave his wife, for sure, and be with me. Instead, he rented her a small, shabby apartment and visited her a couple of times a week.
Oh.
Eventually, Rena got frustrated by his resistance to divorce his wife, and she was getting more and more pregnant every single day. One day, she decided she had had enough, and Rena called her lover's home, and his wife answered.
You?
Uh-oh. And Rena told her everything.
All right, Rena.
A little while later, after the initial shock and glee of her decision wore off, she got a call from her boyfriend saying that they were over and he was going to kill her for ruining his marriage.
Uh-oh.
Rena got scared.
Well, hold on now. She didn't ruin his marriage.
No, no, no.
He ruined his marriage.
Yes.
And got caught.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Just to clarify.
Right.
Rena got scared and called Kathy and said that she'd made a huge mistake. She told her that what she had done, but still didn't give up the identity of the man whose child she was carrying. She was still 9 months pregnant at this point and getting ready to burst.
Oh my god.
This was the last time Kathy would talk to Rena.
Uh-oh.
After she didn't hear back from her for a couple of days, Kathy reported her missing. The police said that she was an immigrant and probably just went home.
Yeah!
People just run away. Of they course. Just go back home.
Always.
Her mother stopped receiving her monthly letters from Rena, and she knew that something was wrong, but no one would help look for her. Fast forward 30 years from 1969 to 1999, we have Ron, his realtor, and his moving company staring down at a woman's hand in a barrel.
Oh my god.
The barrel had plastic pellets in it, and the hand looked mummified. When the crime scene investigators arrived on site, they wanted to keep as much evidence intact as possible, so they did not remove the contents of the barrel right away.
Oh my god.
They took it to be x-rayed, and sure enough, found a woman in the barrel, and she was very pregnant at the time of her death.
Oh no.
Yeah. They removed her from the barrel and found that she died of blunt force trauma, and her son had died with her. In the drum with her was a woman's pocketbook, a plastic stem with leaves, an address book, two rings, and a locket. Unfortunately, the pocketbook and the address book were submerged in a green liquid at the bottom of the barrel.
Hold on. I got that made me so nauseated.
Yeah.
Okay.
They describe it as the goo.
No, they don't.
Yes. It made the address book impossible to read.
Oh, God.
The medical examiners found that she was either white or Hispanic, between 20 and 30 years old. She was short, only about 5 feet tall. She also had unusual dental work. Her two front teeth were capped in gold, which is not something traditionally done in the U.S. This led the Emmy to conclude that she was probably from South America.
Okay.
Some additional clues came from the drum she was found in. There were several numbers on the drum that investigators knew if they could decode, they might be able to narrow down where the drum was from. One of the numbers led them to a chemical company in Linden, New Jersey. They found that the drum was manufactured in 1965, and the green goo at the bottom of the barrel was green halogen dye used to color plastic, but it hadn't been manufactured since 1971. The plastic pellets were used to make plastic leaves and flowers, like the one found on the body.
Oh.
So now they at least have a time frame, and they're like, oh shit, this girl's old.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, they sent the address book off to a forensic document examiner for analysis. They said that it was so heavily coated with the goo, it made it difficult to examine. They put the address book in a drying cabinet for several days to draw out moisture so they could at least attempt to examine the contents. When it was dry, they inspected it with a video spectral comparator, or VSC, which is basically looks like an x-ray for handwriting.
Okay.
Super cool.
Interesting.
Eventually, they were able to see names, addresses, and phone numbers written in the book.
What?
I know.
So cool. I love forensic
files. I know, I do too. Every time I'm like, what?
What? Like the amount of effort that they went into identify this body.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the info in the book was out of date. It was written in 1969 or whatever.
Yeah.
Most people had moved and the phone numbers were all landlines.
Nobody has a landline nowadays.
Right. And if they do, it's probably not the same people who lived there in 1969.
Yeah. Do people still have landlines now? If you have a landline, email us.
Right. Oh my gosh. I was talking to two people that I work with the other day. Did you know that there was a time when people would have more than one landline to their house and they each had different phone numbers? So like the girls in high school could all have their own phone number.
What?
And it would ring to their room.
What?
Yeah.
I never had that.
I definitely did not have that. No. But both the women I was talking to were like, oh yeah, I had a phone in my room and it would ring to my room. And I was like, you mean it rings to the house and like you had a phone in your room? And they're like, no, I had a separate phone number. What?
Ooh, that's so bouge.
I know. I was like, love damn, guys. That. Super fun.
Just me and my chocolate razor.
Oh, yeah. I was excited when I got like a 9 CD player.
Right.
That would rotate my CDs for me.
Yeah, so you can play Now 11 in peace.
Yeah. I could play Now 11, 10, 12, 14, all on a rotating track. Good night. Okay. Unfortunately, the info was out of date. Okay, blah, blah, blah. Of course, this is late in the 90s, so while we do have, like, a spectro of whatever.
Videog or whatever.
X-ray machine.
Yeah.
We don't have Facebook yet.
Oh.
So.
Okay.
We still don't really have a very good way of finding people.
Yeah.
So. And of course, it's an address book, so a lot of people in the book were just first names.
Oh, sure. You know who Alice is.
Yeah. We don't need first, last name.
No, address, date of birth, last four of the soch.
Which all would have been very helpful.
Credit cards.
Yeah. The police believe Ron Cohen when they said that the barrel had been in the crawl space since he moved in 1990 due to the date of the barrel.
Yeah.
The previous owners told police the same, and the investigators decided to look back through the ownership of the history of the house and found the couple that were living there in the 60s.
Ooh.
Howard Elkins and his wife owned the house in the 60s and had retired and moved to Boca Raton in Florida.
Boca!
The neighbors told investigators that he worked at a plastics company called Melrose Plastics.
Oh.
Melrose Plastics manufactured plastic trees, plants, and flowers.
Uh-oh.
An anonymous tip came in, which put more of the pieces and more of the pieces of the puzzle into place. Wah. Taylor, why did you write that? The man said that the drum was used to mix the dyes together at Melrose Plastics. He had worked there, and he said that he knew that Elkins had been having an affair with a Hispanic woman in the 60s who was his employee.
Oh.
He also said that she worked for him at the factory. The detectives flew to Boca Raton to speak with Mr. Elkins. He was less than cooperative.
No shit.
He told detectives that he did not use the kind of barrel that they showed him at Melrose Plastics. He said he never used halogen green dye in their materials. They asked him if he ever had an affair while he was at Melrose Plastics, and they surprised him. He surprised the detectives by saying that he did, in fact, have an affair. But he couldn't remember her name, couldn't describe her at all, tall, short, Hispanic, white. I don't remember.
What do you mean you don't remember?
Right.
A very brief affair.
Yeah. When the detectives asked to have a DNA sample in order to rule him out, he declined.
Mm-hmm.
They said, okay, no problem, we'll be back tomorrow with a warrant, and then you'll just have to give it to us. The interview was interrupted when Elkins received a call from his wife. He answered and asked the detectives to leave because this would be a private phone call. They did, but they said that they had no doubt that he was involved in the case somehow.
Yeah.
The next day, as they were gathering paperwork to get the court order, the detectives got a call saying, please tell me you have Elkins in your custody.
Uh-oh.
And they said, no, we're just getting ready to get the warrant. Why? That's when they found out that he was missing. After a brief search, they found him in his neighbor's garage. He had climbed into their SUV.
What?
And took his own life.
What? What a coward.
How rude.
What a fucking piece. God.
Like, yeah. Like,
in
we don't
somebody want... else's car?
Yeah! Like, we don't want my family to have to pick up this mess.
Fuck their family.
But fuck somebody else's next door neighbor.
That's awful.
Yeah.
And that's a preventative tale on why you lock your doors.
Yeah!
That is so disrespectful.
How horrifying!
Get up, going to work, you know, walking out to your car, you got coffee in one hand,
no.
Laptop in the other.
Your day is ruined.
Oh my god. Your day, your car.
Your Oh my god.
The lasting PTSD.
There are photos online. I also highly recommend you don't look that up, but listeners, don't do it.
I'm gonna
Jenny,
go
for it.
What's this guy's first name?
Howard.
Howard.
Howard Elkins.
That seems so out of character for a Howard. Maybe not a Howard. A Howie, definitely out of character.
Yeah. No, Howard sounds not completely out of character.
Okay.
Okay.
You can keep going.
Sorry. He was found by his son, and he did not leave a note. They took the blood sample from him then, although this seemed to be enough of an admission of guilt, and the blood sample showed that there was a 99.93 chance that Howard Elkins was indeed the father of the unborn child.
Ugh.
Now they just needed to figure out the identity of the woman. They looked back into the address book to find more information. On one of the pages, there was a note that said, Residencia Nombre, which is an immigrant identification number. And they also found a piece of paper that said, don't be mad, I told the truth. There was also a name, Kathy Andrade. So, her teacher.
Mm.
Investigators were shocked when they called the number listed for Kathy and found that she was still living at the same house 30 years later.
Good job, Kathy.
Yep.
We love a stable one.
Kathy immediately knew the identity of the woman they were calling about. This was her long-lost friend, Rhea Angelica Mariquin. Kathy was in tears that they finally had found her friend. She had wondered about her every single day since that last phone call. Kathy said that she had a beautiful personality and always spoke about her family. Raina had told Kathy that she was pregnant, and when Kathy asked if they were going to get married, Raina said eventually that they would. Raina was very protective of her lover's identity, so Kathy never found out his name, although Raina did tell her that they had worked together, and Kathy pieced together that Raina was having an affair with her boss.
Mm.
Eventually, she told Kathy that her boyfriend was married and had three other children. She began to question whether or not that they would actually be together. After Raina called Elkins' wife and Raina called Kathy to tell her that she had made a huge mistake, Kathy tried to calm her friend down. She said that she would come over and they'd talk through it and find a solution. Kathy went to Raina's apartment. By the time she got there, Raina was gone. Kathy waited for hours, and when she never heard anything from Raina, she decided to go to the police. The police in the 60s were not helpful. They said that she was probably just out shopping or went home to see her family. Because Kathy didn't know the identity of the man who had threatened her, they never looked into her disappearance.
Wow.
Police surmised that Elkins lured her to the factory, and once she arrived, he beat her to death. They believe he took her to his suburban home with the intention of putting her in a barrel and taking her out on his boat and dumping her into the ocean. However, the drum ended up being too heavy, so he just rolled into the crawl space instead.
Oh my god.
A reporter named Oscar Corral covered the story, and he flew to El Salvador to see if he could locate Raina's family. Shockingly, he found Raina's mother, who was 95. She told Oscar that she had been dreaming about her daughter for 30 years and that she even had dreams that she was in a barrel. Reyna's body was taken to El Salvador for a proper burial a month after she was buried. Her mother died.
And oh, my God.
Buried next to each other.
Oh.
So.
Oh.
That is the story of Reyna Merrickman. A solved case after 30 years.
Jesus. I'm glad her mom lived long enough to have answers.
Oh, yeah. I think that's probably the only reason she was still hanging on, you know?
You think so?
But.
Could be.
Yeah.
God, that is so sad. I have something sad for you.
Do you?
I do.
I can't wait.
Ugh. This one. Oh, boy, this one.
Oh, no. What you gonna tell me?
My source for this is all Wikipedia and their various sources, but I didn't source every source from Wikipedia that I did.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
We got to Wikipedia.
We got every article from Wikipedia that was is the entire story. This is a serial killer. So there's lots of information.
Oof.
About this guy. We're doing a big in. This one has a unassuming name. This is a story of Pee Wee Gaskin. Born Donald Harry Gaskins. Went by Pee Wee. No.
Okay.
Donald Henry Gaskins was born in Florence County, South Carolina, to Yulia Parrott. I like the name Yulia.
That's pretty.
Mm-hmm. He was the last in a string of illegitimate children. He was small for his age and immediately gained the nickname Pee Wee.
Okay.
As an adult, he was 5'5 on a good day and did not weigh more than 130 pounds.
Okay.
So, little guy. Gaskin's early life was characterized by a ton of neglect and abuse, which seems to be the case with most serial killers.
Mm-hmm.
James Beattie is a college professor who would go on to spend hundreds of hours studying, interviewing, everything with Pee Wee. And his family would later describe Pee Wee as a great manipulator and con artist who was street smart.
Great.
A keen sense of humor and friendly, entertaining personality. He was a child of an unmarried mother and was abused by a male relative that left Gaskins with a split personality, according to James Beattie.
Okay.
When he was 1 year old, Gaskins reportedly drank a bottle of kerosene, which caused him to have convulsions until he was 3 years old.
Oh my God.
His mother took so little interest in him that the first time he learned his given name, Donald, was when it was read out loud in his first court appearance.
What?
Mm-hmm.
How old was he?
I'm so glad you asked. Would you also like to know the reason he was in court?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Gaskins committed a crime spree with a handful of other deplorables in the area. The spree included burglaries, assaults, and gang rape.
Oh, God.
Those criminal activities began at a young age, accumulating when 13-year-old Gaskins was convicted for assaulting a young woman. 13? He was 13. That was how old he was when he learned his name.
And also when he was committing rape.
Yeah, gang rape. Gang rape. And assaults and burglaries.
Mm-hmm.
I think that assault doesn't really cover it in this because he whacked her over the head with an axe.
Oh my
God. When she caught him breaking into the family home. The court, where he heard his name for the first time, was his sentencing, and he was sent to the South Carolina Industrial School for White Boys in Florence, South Carolina, for 5 years.
Okay.
At the reform school, he was regularly raped by his fellow inmates. After escaping from the school, getting married, and voluntarily returning to complete his sentence, he was released in 1951 at the age of 18. He briefly worked on a tobacco plantation until his arrest 2 years later in 1953, after he attacked a teenage girl with a hammer for an alleged insult.
Whew.
Whew, indeed. He was sentenced to 6 years imprisonment at the South Carolina State Penitentiary. Being in prison, he earned his fellow prisoners respect by killing the most feared man in the prison, Hazel Brazell, And what Gaskin said was self-defense.
Not when you're going after people with axes and hammers. Left I have my right. doubts.
Not yeah. since you were 13 years old. Doubts. Yeah, I have my doubts. As a result, Gaskins received an extra 3 years in prison for involuntary manslaughter. But Yes. Involuntary. Involuntary. Like, he didn't volunteer to kill this man.
All right. Okay. Okay. I just can't question it at this point.
But when he committed this murder, it kind of seemed to be like a turning point in his personality for him, where he stopped seeing himself as a victim and started to see himself playing the role of an aggressor because he was so small. He's been sexually assaulted his entire life. Now he found a little bit of control and power and manipulation by taking out the biggest, scariest guy in the prison.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anyway, he escaped from prison in 1955.
Damn it.
He hid in the back of a garbage truck and fled to Florida, where he took employment with a traveling carnival. And this is why we don't go to the state fair.
No.
He was rearrested, remanded to custody, and paroled in August 1961. Following his release from prison, Gaskins reverted to committing burglaries and fencing stolen property. And 2 years after his parole, he was arrested again.
What is this, number four? Five?
We haven't even started on the serial killing yet.
We're just in and out of jail.
We are in early life.
Okay. All right.
So yes, 2 years after his parole, he was arrested for the rape of a 12-year-old girl. But he escaped while awaiting sentencing. They just can't keep their hands on him.
He's being real Ted Bundy about all this.
He's very Ted Bundy about it. He's a slippery little dude. Just sliming his way out.
Ugh.
Yeah.
It's probably oily.
Yeah. Ew, so grimy.
Ugh. It's probably like there's like a layer of like sand
ew,
and oil on his skin. Oh, ugh. Yeah.
I am nauseated.
He's not a clean boy.
No, he's not. And you'll see the photos. He's a absolute slime ball.
Yuck.
Gaskins was rearrested in Georgia and sentenced to 8 years imprisonment. And then he was paroled again in November 1968.
Listen. Gotta stop paroling people that keep repeat offending.
Thank you. Thank you. I agree.
Quit.
That he was.
Cannot be in regular society.
No. You have had many chances to not rape and assault people. At this point, in 1968, he was 35 years old, and he has been sentenced to 19 years of various incarcerations.
Bruh.
Bro, indeed. Upon his release, Gaskins moved to the town of Sumter and began work with a roofing company because no one ever did a goddamn background check in the 1960s. Not one single soul. And before I proceed into the actual murders that made him a serial killer, I feel like this is a good opportunity to again get on a soapbox about how our society continues to do a fucking piss poor job of rehabilitating criminals. There are criminals who cannot be rehabilitated, like Pee Wee Gaskins. He's a total sicko. But I like what to do with people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like this. Like, Britain used to dump them all in Australia, and that kind of worked out okay for them for a while.
Yeah, for a while.
For a while. I know for certain that there's no way that he should have ever been allowed back into society.
No, no.
After, but there's just not any kind of programming for this particular kind of person.
Right, they should at least go through a program to be like deemed like, do we see an opportunity
here
or are you going to repeat offend,
or do we need to like keep you
until you're not a danger,
or maybe you're just a danger for the rest of your life and now you
congratulations you live at the jail
or some other type of institution for people who are incredibly mentally ill
and violently
mentally ill.
Yeah,
but then like, you know what I mean? Mental institutions really got a bad rap there.
Yeah, they were not great.
No. Which I feel like is why we funneled them into prisons.
Right.
But that also is not great.
No great things here.
Moving forward. But yes, Gaskins would claim his first non-prison related murder victim She was a blonde female hitchhiker who he tortured and murdered in September 1969 before sinking her body in a swamp.
Wow.
In his memoirs that you can read.
No.
He claimed, quote, "All I could think about is how I could do anything I wanted to her."
It's disgusting.
It's so foul. It's so foul. This hitchhiker was to be the first of many he claimed had picked up and killed while driving around the coastal highways in South Florida. And in his memoirs, he classified all of these victims as his coastal kills. And they were both male and female, whom he killed purely for pleasure, on average approximately once every 6 weeks when he went hunting to quell his feelings of, quote, bothersomeness.
Once every 6 weeks?
Once every 6 weeks.
What is that, like 10 a year?
Yeah.
Jesus!
Jesus almighty.
All right.
Florida was a lawless land.
Yeah, Bundy was out in Florida for a while, too.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which,
heck, in Florida, he would claim to have tortured and mutilated his victims while attempting to keep them alive for as long as possible.
Oh, the worst.
He confessed to killing these victims using a variety of methods, including stabbing, suffocation, mutilation, and even claimed to have cannibalized some of them.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, Lord, indeed.
Oh, it's the worst when they want to keep him alive.
Yeah.
That's so
It's a very spidery thing to do.
Yes.
To play with
your
victim. Oh, it's sick. Gaskins later confessed to killing 80 to 90 of such victims. Although his claims to have committed any coastal kills have never been corroborated. In his memoirs, he claims that although he started killing every 6 weeks, later he felt the overpowering need to seek out and commit a coastal kill by the 10th of each calendar month.
Really?
Yeah, which is like such a weird arbitrary date.
Yeah. Sorry, my laptop said to go to
sleep. You're okay. There's no evidence to support any of the claims made by Gaskins that he had committed any murders other than that of Hazel Brazell and the 14 victims listed below, whose bodies have been found and identified and whose law enforcement records and Gaskins' sworn testimony substantiate. So, I'm going to go year by year because that is the easiest way to lay these out.
Okay, give me 1 second. I just want to make sure that nothing like hit pause. Nope. Okay.
Good?
Yep. Okay.
1970.
All right.
In November, he was just paroled 2 years ago. Right? And this is, like, it's not like he took a breather.
He's paroled right now?
Oh, no, no, no. This is, so he was just paroled the last time in 1960.
Okay. Okay, hold on. Sorry, I just got so worried.
He's not alive any longer. Okay. The boogeyman has been disposed of.
Okay, so he was paroled 2 years before 1970.
Yeah, which is when his first non- quote unquote non-prison related murder
happened,
unless you believe the coastal kills.
Okay, I'm back on track.
Got it. We're good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. November 1970, Gaskins committed the first of a series of confirmed murders, primarily people that he knew and killed for personal reasons. And his first victim was his own niece, Janice Kirby, age 15, and her friend Patricia Ann Alsbrook, age 17, both of whom he beat to death.
Ooh.
He claimed that he was enraged at their drug abuse, while others say he was attempting to sexually assault them.
Excuse me, sir. With your high horse?
Right. Yes, their drug abuse.
Yeah, terrible.
Yeah, no. It is commonly believed that he was attempting to sexually assault them and they put up a fight or threatened to say something. In 1972, he poisoned Martha Ann Dix, who was 20, in March, either because she claimed that Pee-wee was the father to her unborn child, or because she was an alleged drug dealer who supplied Kirby and Alsbrook with drugs. I'm not really buying that.
No.
That arc there. In 1973, Pee-wee Gaskins, of all of his other troubles, was also a overt racist.
Oh.
Yeah.
Add it to the list.
Yeah. Of terrible fucking shit that he was. And he drowned Dorraine Hope Dempsey, who was 22, and her 2-year-old daughter, Robin Michelle Dempsey. Gaskins had befriended her several years prior and was angry upon hearing that she had become pregnant a second time with an African-American man. She had been living with Gaskins' friend Johnny Sellers and his brother Carl in North Charleston, South Carolina. They brought her to Gaskins' home in Prospect and left her there to speak with Gaskins about staying with him for a short time there while she was pregnant. Upset that Dorraine was having a second biracial child, Gaskins responded by walking her to his backyard pond where he drowned both the mother and her toddler.
And the unborn baby.
And the unborn baby.
That's so horrible. He's such an asshole.
He's fucking terrible.
We hate him.
More than anything. He's terrible. In June 1974, Gaskins shot his friend Johnny Sellers, who was 36, in the back of the head, and stabbed stabbed his ex-girlfriend, Jessie Ruth Judy, who was 22. After Sellers asked for money he was owed from the sale of a stolen boat.
So, you know what's really wild to me about all this is that most of the time serial killers don't kill, like, people they know.
Right.
Like, he's picking from a very close pool.
Yes.
How is nobody asking the right questions here?
All of the people, like, his friends and, like, people are involved in these murders and they just never say anything because they're all so deeply rooted in crime.
Okay. It's wild.
Yes.
I was expecting you to continue telling me people that he knows.
Yes.
Okay.
Gaskins was scared that Sellers would reveal his identity, and he was involved in an auto theft ring. Jessie Judy was murdered at the same time because she could have told police about Gaskins' criminal activities, including the murder of her boyfriend, Johnny Sellers.
Jesus. Okay.
In 1975, Silas Yates, who was 45, was murdered in February by either a karate chop to his neck or a slit throat in a murder-for-hire scheme. But forensics alleged it was a knife, but Gaskins disputed the claim. He said
I karate
chopped him to the throat and killed him. Right.
What an idiot.
Okay, Pee-wee. Yates was in a dispute with his ex-girlfriend, Suzanne Kipper Owens, and she and her husband, John Owens, paid Gaskins $1,500 to murder Yates. $1,500. $1,500. That's not rent for most people.
No! That's 1 month's rent!
Right.
Barely. Good grief.
Another murder in 1975 was Diane Bellamy Neely. She was separated from her husband, Walter Neely, who was one of Pee-wee's closest friends and his criminal co-conspirator.
Okay, so this dude for sure knew.
Yes. Yes. On April 10th, 1975, Gaskins stabbed her to death and then shot her boyfriend, Avery Leroy Howard, age 35. Among other reasons, Gaskins murdered Diane because she had threatened to report to police that Gaskins was allowing underage teenagers to have sex in his home.
Ooh.
Ooh, indeed. Avery Howard was murdered because he asked for money to pay attorneys and cover legal expenses following his arrest for fraud and auto theft. Gaskins worried Avery Howard would tell police about Gaskins' criminal activities. And let this be a reminder of the one thing that I have learned from all of this, like, hours of true crime research, is that snitching tendencies will get you deader than a doornail.
Yes.
As someone, like, I feel like I myself harbor deep snitching tendencies, and it's so important to mind your own business. And I'll have to tell you in, like, some grab bag down the road about the Red Roof Inn in Dayton, Ohio.
Okay.
Anyway, not saying that Avery deserved to be murdered. He didn't. Whether he was going to snitch or not. But, like, that is something that I see so often is, like, they were going to tell.
Yeah.
About my conniving ways. So I had to whack him. Kim Gelkins, age 13, was stabbed to death to keep her from telling police Gaskins had moved her from North Charleston without permission and to keep her from telling police that she was being sexually abused by several adult men, including Gaskins. Dennis, Blammy, age 27, and John Henry Knight, age 15, were half-brothers, and Diane was their sister. Within minutes of each other, Gaskin shot the two brothers in the back of the head on October 10th, 1975. Pee-wee Gaskins had promised to pay Dennis for some stolen guns, and when confronted by him at Gaskin's trailer, he responded by offering to return the guns from the woods behind his home. He took Blammy into the woods to retrieve the guns, but murdered him instead. Mm. John Henry Knight was directed to the same area, allegedly to meet his brother, but was also murdered to ensure he could never speak of the crimes.
Wow.
A lot of cover-up.
Yep.
Happening here. Gaskins was finally arrested November 14th, 1975, when Walter Neely, remember, Gaskins murdered his ex-wife.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm, confessed to police that he had knowledge of Gaskins murdering Dennis and Johnny. Jeez. Neely confessed to police that Gaskins had confided in him to having killed several people who had been listed as missing persons during the previous 5 years.
Oh.
And had indicated to him where they were buried. On December 4th, 1975, Neely led police to land near Gaskins' home in Prospect, where police discovered the bodies of 8 of his victims. Just on his property.
Oh.
Man made his own little graveyard back there.
Ooh, unfortunate.
That's so fucking sick.
Yeah.
It just is. Gaskins was tried on one charge of murder on May 24th, 1976, found guilty 4 days later.
Nice.
And was sentenced to death.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Which was later commuted to life in prison.
Oh.
So when the South Carolina General Assembly's 1974 ruling on capital punishment was changed to conform to U.S. Supreme Court guidelines for the death penalty. So they did sentence him to the death penalty, but then the federal law changed and they're like, all right, fine, life in prison.
Okay.
And then on September 2nd, 1982, Gaskins committed another murder.
He can't stop.
He cannot stop. And this is the murder for which he earned the title of the meanest man in America.
Well,
this murder.
Okay.
While incarcerated in the high security block at the South Carolina Correctional Institution, Gaskins killed a death row inmate named Rudolph Tyner, who had received his sentence for killing an elderly couple during a bungled armed robbery of their store in Merle's Inlet, South Carolina. Gaskins was hired to commit this murder by Tony Simo, the son of Tyner's victims.
Okay.
Gaskins initially made several unsuccessful attempts to kill Tyner by lacing his food and drink with poison before he opted to use explosives.
In a prison?
In a prison. To accomplish this, Gaskins rigged a device similar to a portable radio in Tyner's cell and told Tyner that this would allow them to communicate between cells. When Tyner followed Gaskins' instructions to hold a speaker that was secretly laden with C4 plastic explosive, unbeknownst to him.
Oh, God.
When he agreed to hold it to his ear at an agreed time, Gaskins detonated the explosives from his cell and killed Tyner. He later said, "The last thing Tyner heard was me laughing." Gaskins was tried for Tyner's murder and sentenced to death. It was the first time in the history of South Carolina that a white man was sentenced to death for the murder of a black man.
The first time?
The first time.
In the 80s.
Yeah, 82. 82. Mm. The first time.
Sounds wrong it to me.
I promise you that was not the first time
a white man
was
killed.
Deserving
no.
of the death penalty for murdering a black man. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Jesus. While on death row, Gaskins claimed to have been committed between 100 to 110 murders, including that of Margaret Pay Catino, the 13-year-old daughter of then South Carolina State Senator James Catino Jr.
What?
Yeah. Sorry, I scrolled to the top.
Dang it.
Dang it. These murders have been widely disputed, and there has been no evidence to support Gaskins' claims. And I need a criminal psychologist to explain to us why murderers do this. Because there was another one in Texas where he was arrested for, like, 2 murders, and then he claimed ownership of, like, all of the missing cases. Like, why?
It's the infamy.
Is it?
They
the glory?
Want the fame.
The power?
Yeah.
It's so sick. I don't get it.
Because they don't feel shame or, like, guilt or anything
really?
About it. They think that the higher their body count is, the more, like, fame they're going to get, which sometimes is true.
Well, I mean,
you know,
we're a good example
yeah.
of murderers being infamous.
Yeah.
I just said, what do you mean they don't? I can't experience. Shame is the number one most common emotion that I feel.
Same. So, guilt.
Guilt and shame.
Yeah.
So I'm just
very intimately, like, familiar.
With those.
With those feelings.
Live those on the daily. Yeah. What is it like to not feel
to
those?
To not feel that.
Does it feel free?
I bet.
I bet it does, too. Of the 14 confirmed murders, he received 9 life sentences for murdering 9 people. Doreen Hope Dempsey, Robin Michelle Dempsey, Johnny Sellers, Jesse Ruth Judy, Barnwell Yates, Diane Bellamy, Neely, Avery Leroy Howard Jr., Dennis Bellamy, and John Henry Knight. He received 2 death sentences, one for killing Bellamy that was overturned, and then the other for killing Rudolph Tyler. Gaskins was executed September 6th, 1991. At 1:10 in the morning in the electric chair.
I found that kind of frequently.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? I was off put. I was like, 1:10 in the morning. I feel like that, like, let me sleep.
Right.
Through the night.
I don't know if it's because they want the rest of the prisoners to be asleep.
So they don't, like, drag them out. Right. Through.
I don't know. That's common, I think.
That's so weird. Why?
Oh, I wonder if it's because the governor has, like, that whole day to, like, pardon somebody.
So they do it early in the morning? That's snakey behavior.
Or they have to wait, like, that whole day to see if the governor is going to pardon them, and then it's midnight.
Oh.
I don't know. I'm just trying to think about it.
Interesting. I'm sure we can find the answer to this.
Yeah. We'll research it. Maybe it'll be a grab bag.
Well, after, he was executed on September 6th at 1:10 a.m. in the electric chair, which was hours after he tried to kill himself by slitting his wrists.
Oh.
His last words were, "I'll let my lawyers talk for me. I'm ready to go."
Wow.
And that is the story of Pee Wee Gaskins, who is truly the meanest motherfucker in America.
That sucks.
He's the worst.
We don't like it.
We don't like it at all. He's not, like, I wouldn't say he's, like, as deranged as some of the other, like, more notorious serial killers, but, like, he's just so lackadaisical and business-like about it.
Yeah. It's almost very, like, black and white.
It's very mobby.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I'm not, you know, gross. It freaks me out. So, yes, that is the story of that.
Pee-wee, man.
Get it together, bro.
He can't.
Unable to.
No.
Get it together.
Oh, my God. Well, thanks.
Yeah, you're awesome. Do you have a bright and shiny?
I do. I got to hang out and watch The Mummy and The Mummy Returns with a friend the other night. And it's been a really long time since she'd seen them. And she didn't, like, remember much of them. And they're my favorite, like, some of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
So I was very excited to do that. And then we just got to geek out about the fact that we're going to be in Universal soon, and we're gonna ride the mummy ride with our mummy movie
in our current timeline.
Yeah, in the current
timeline. Already been to Universal by the time this airs.
That's
probably
true. So I guess that's my bright and shiny. Sorry about it being in a weird timeline.
That's okay. It's still something to be happy about. It doesn't matter when it happens.
Yeah, I'll still be happy about it when this comes out.
I'll still be happy about it.
I will. What's your bright and shiny?
You know, my bright and shiny is I just went on a weekend trip. And when I got there, I unzipped my bag and I went to go look for my hairbrush. And I was like, I left my hairbrush there. I know. It was terrible. But I found it the next day.
Oh.
At the bottom of the bag.
Oh, nice.
So I did remember to bring it. And I got to be honest, that really, really made my day. I know it sounds stupid, but I was very stressed about not being able to brush my hair.
Yeah, I get it.
A long weekend.
I just went on a trip for work, and I'm fairly certain I left my foundation.
Ooh, shoot.
Yeah.
Is it a good one?
Yeah, I mean, it's on sale at TJ Maxx. It's a KVD Beauty but it got discontinued. I really like it, so.
That's a bummer.
It's probably gone.
Gone for evs.
Yeah.
Might I recommend the NARS? I really am enjoying the NARS Radiance Foundation.
I haven't tried that one yet, so I might have to go on a little adventure. Oh.
So there you have it. Thank you for listening.
Yeah. If you want to send us a spooky tale, you can send it to alittlebitgrim@gmail.com or visit us on the website, alittlebitgrim.com. You can follow us on the social medias. If you like us, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcast or Podchaser, but we would love to hear from you.
Send us a message. Yeah. We want to know what's going on. Creepy tales.
We love it. And don't forget to be nice to yourself.
and to others.
Goodbye. Bye.